Good morning. Morning, all. My name is Alderman Daniel Lespana of the First Ward. I'm very pleased to welcome you to the First Ward, to Roberto Clemente High School, and also to this budget town hall today. I'm very glad that this event is happening because you being here is essential. It's essential that we recognize that a budget is not just a ledger of dollars coming in and dollars coming out, but it is a reflection of our collective values as a city. It's how we value, how we invest in ourselves and in our neighborhoods and in our cities. I fully believe in a budget as a moral document, but it is wholly insufficient if it's just a reflection of the values and interests of your alderman and your mayor. As much as we endeavor to represent you well, it has to reflect your values and what you hope for yourselves and your communities. So I'm really grateful that you're here today. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to our moderator, Ms. Claudette Baker. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Alderman. And good morning to each of you, and thank you for coming to the second of five budget town hall meetings. Before I get started, we want you to know that there are interpreter services that are available. The headsets are available in the lobby for anyone who would like translation.
Si necesitan servicios de interpretación, los audífonos están disponibles en la entrada.
Gracias.
Thank you. So the purpose of this morning is to have a two-way conversation about the priorities and challenges around the 2020 budget. In the audience, we have representation from commissioners and staff from every city department. So commissioners and staff, if you're able to stand, please do so, so that we can recognize you. Great, thank you. We also have several aldermen and alderwomen in the room. If you would also stand, if you're able to do so, so that you can be recognized. Thank you. We have several volunteers with public testimony slips and pens throughout the auditorium. At any point, you can raise your hand and someone will pass you a blank testimony slip. Please be sure to include a sentence or two about what you hope to speak on this morning. This morning we'll have two parts to this program. Up first, you'll hear from the mayor and her senior staff about the 2020 budget. And during the second part, we will randomly select names to give your public testimony so that we can hear directly from you. Again, my name is Claudette Baker, and I will be your moderator for the morning. Just a few housekeeping details. If your cell phone is not in the silence mode or turned off, we do request that you do that at this time. Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce Chicago's Budget Director, Susie Park, Chicago's Chief Financial Officer, Jenny Bennett, and Chicago's Mayor, Lori Lightfoot, who will give her opening remarks.
All right, so good morning, everyone. Thank you all for being here, which feels early on a Saturday morning. It's an honor to be here at Clemente High School in the heart of a vibrant, thriving community. So I'm grateful to be here. And we are here because we want to make sure that your voices get heard as part of the budget process. This is truly our opportunity to hear you, to listen to you, and take that information into consideration as we start crafting a budget for what, as you know, is going to be a very difficult year. As I said at the start of my campaign for mayor, right on through my recent State of the City address, we have to shine a light on our budget-making process. And that means being open about the challenges that we face, being transparent with residents, and being inclusive when we make decisions that impact residents and families. We've already gotten started by changing the way that our budget forecast is formatted to make it easier and more accessible to understand. And I have to give thanks to our budget director, Susie Park, and her team. Our budget forecast is designed not just to educate Chicagoans on where their tax dollars are going. It's meant to empower and inspire each of you to help shape what our budget will look like going forward. My central mission as mayor is to unlock our city's potential, to end the either or and us versus them mentalities of our government. And that only happens by breaking the cycle of investing here but not there, of providing advantages to some but not others, of listening to only a few and while ignoring the many. That's what brings all of us here today. That's why I'm here this morning. I want to hear directly from you. I believe residents should expect to have a mayor who listens. I've already spoken about some of our own budget ideas, from making our government run more efficiently to working with Springfield to bringing a new casino to Chicago. Now it's your turn and your opportunity. The change that we want and the change that we need has to happen in rooms like this and discussions like the one that we're going to have. We created these town halls because my team and I are committed to hearing from you, our residents, our parents, our young people, our small business owners, our teachers, our community members. We want to hear from you on where we should invest, how we should deliver services, and how better we can deliver services, and what those services should look like to serve the needs of residents. These discussions bring to life our shared mission of creating a Chicago that is safer, fairer, and more equitable for every resident. And as I've said many times before, we are living in one of the most important moments in our civic history. And while we face significant challenges as a city, we are also standing at the forefront of tremendous opportunity. That is what today is all about, embarking on a new, respectful partnership with our residents on the key issues in their lives through open dialogue, ensuring that we take full advantage of the opportunities available to us and working as collaborators to develop real, measurable solutions to our challenges, which starts with listening. That is how we create a Chicago whose growth is truly inclusive and whose opportunities are fully accessible to all. That process happens here, and as we face our challenges by working together. Now, I want you to know that down here in front are a number of city agencies that are represented, commissioners, deputy commissioners, aldermen who are here. And I want to thank Alderman Lespada, who I think is going to give us a brief word, because we are sitting in his ward, I believe. So we'll do that, and then I will turn the program over to our budget director, Susie Park. But thank you all for being here. This is the second of 5 budget hearings that we are going to have across the city. Thank you very much for being here. Good to see you, Francine. Alderman?
I mean, I will be ever so brief because I really want to hear your perspectives on the day. But so much of what I feel was shared by our mayor, my goal in taking office was to open up the doors of power to your voices. It can be done, and maybe it is swift and efficient for one person to make decisions on behalf of millions, but it is so much more profoundly and empowering and encouraging and democratic for your voices to be represented at the table. For myself, I believe so fully in equity, the idea that we invest up to the challenges of our city, and that we invest truly through shared sacrifice, but particularly by asking those who have profited so greatly on this city to share, pay their fair share in the budget that we need to see. But that is my 90 seconds. I want to hand this over to this team and to hear your perspectives on the day. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Susie Park, and I'm the city's budget director. First off, thank you all for taking time out of your busy weekend and joining us this morning. We look forward to hearing from all of you today. Before I get started, I did want to just flag and remind everyone that we do have that community engagement fair that is being held out in the lobby. We have nearly 20 city departments that are here today with us to answer any questions you may have about our city services and provide information also about their programs. They will be here throughout the morning as well as 30 minutes past our program, so I recommend that everyone stops by and speak with everyone at the table. This morning, before we get into the public testimony portion of our day, I'm going to spend just a few minutes providing a brief overview about the city's budget and just to set some foundation about what we're going to be talking about. I will do a quick overview of the budget as it stands, our forecast for next year, as well as some of the survey results that we've heard from all of you. So as a quick reminder, as we talk through the city's budget this morning, this does not include our sister agencies, which are, as you see up there, the Chicago Public Schools, the Chicago Park District, the Chicago Transit Authority, the Housing Authority, as well as City Colleges of Chicago. These are our sister agencies, and they each have their own distinct budget, as well as oversight and approving bodies that are outside of the city's budget process that we're going to be talking about today. Overall, the city's 2019 budget is $10.67 billion and is comprised of six major funds. Our fiscal year does run from January 1st through December 31st. Many of you hopefully picked up a two-pager on your way in. It's a kind of a brief overview of our budget. The backside does show where our full city budget for 2019 and where the money comes from is in blue, and all the different city services where that money is funding is shown in green. Today, though, we're going to be focusing on the corporate budget portion of the larger $10.67 billion budget, which is where most of our basic city services and operations are funded through. These include the police and fire departments, our public health, street cleaning, tree trimming. Those type of services are all represented in the corporate budget, which alone is $3.8 billion of our overall budget. In August and every year, we release a budget forecast, which kind of projects our revenues and expenditures that we expect over the next 3 years. The forecast does focus primarily on the corporate fund, because that is where most of our basic services, again, are funded through, and that is where we experience the gap that we're going to be talking about. So many of you have probably heard through media and other ways that our gap for next year is estimated to be about $838 million. This is, as you see on the chart, it's calculated by showing that our expenditures for next year are going to be increasing by about $853 million. Our current revenues that we have in this year's budget shows a slight modest increase of $15 million, which leaves the gap that we need to close to about $838 million. So what does that make of? It's on your two-pager, but essentially, these are the major categories where we're seeing costs increase over the next year for settlements and judgments, our debt services, our personnel and benefits, as well as the pension costs. So now that we know what the gap is, one of the reasons we're here today and over the next several weeks, we will be working towards closing that gap in order to present a balanced 2020 budget. We're going to be looking at department savings, government efficiencies, exploring new revenue sources, as well as dedicating structural funding sources, as well as financial reforms are all the different things we're looking at in order to close this budget gap. So one of the things we're doing today, and what we've done for many of you who filled out our survey, I thank you, and for if you haven't, I highly ask that all of you go and fill out our survey, is we have been asking our residents for input on our budgeting process. To date, we have over 6,400 surveys that have been completed as of yesterday, but we also wanted to know kind of what residents are interested in learning about. And so we have heard that a lot of people want to hear about property taxes, as well as really understanding, the pension costs that we have been talking about that many of you have probably heard. So I'm just going to spend just a couple minutes going through pension and property tax at a very high level. So overall, the city has four pension funds. You see them listed up there. We contribute. These pension funds are constitutionally protected benefits for our municipal employees. Generally, while enrolled in a pension fund, our employees are not contributing or accumulating Social Security benefits, and a person's role within the city determines which pension fund you are a member of. These contributions and benefits are set in state law and are further protected by the state constitution. So historically, we've heard a lot of people have asked, like, how did we get here? You hear that, you know, our increase in pension funds is going up by $277 million next year, and it's about $1 billion over the next 4 years. How did we get here? Historically, the amounts required by the state to be paid were not adjusted to account for growth in long-term expenses, as well as they were made worse by recessions that we had in the early and late 2000s. To address this crisis, between 2011 and 2017, the city did work with the state to change the state law by increasing contributions made by new employees, as well as decreasing retirement benefits owed to the new employees. These efforts will also require the city to actually increase our annual contribution to meet these obligations. So what you see here on the chart is kind of the growth that you're going to see over the next several years. The city's contribution to all four funds are going to increase to an amount that actually accurately amounts for our expenses and moves our pension funds towards a more secure future. So we will be moving to actuarial funding, which you'll hear a lot about and read about over the next several weeks, to get our functions to 90% solvent by 2055 and 2057. So the other big question that we've heard a lot about is property taxes. And so I just wanted to lay some foundation behind that. For those of you who are homeowners, you've probably seen this bill come. So we've gotten a lot of questions about it. We've gotten questions about assessments. And so we did want to clarify that property values are assessed by the Cook County assessor. Our assessor is Fritz Kagi. Every 3 years, and they're based on similar sales of similar properties. The assessor is the actual office that manages the assessment and administration of the property tax. What I did want to share with you quickly is just kind of, and you may have seen this on your bill, but how your property tax dollars are actually broken down. So there are multiple levying taxing bodies that do take a portion of your property tax. If you see on the chart, 54% of that actually is for the public schools. We have a small amount for city colleges, 5% for the park district, 7% does go to Cook County, 1% is the forest preserve, 6% is for the water reclamation districts. We have, and then the remaining 25% does go to the city of Chicago. So of our 25%, where does that money go? I did want to share that 30% of it is to pay off long-term debts. You have a 7% that goes to our library system, and then the remaining 64% of that does go for pension contributions. So in 2019, if you look on the back of your chart, property taxes did represent about 90% of the city's overall revenue. So I know I've shared this with you very quickly. I did want to just set just a brief budget overview. But all the information that I did share with you today and this morning is available on this website, chicago.gov/2020budget. On there, we have all of the handouts that you have today. Our forecast is on there, as well as our survey. There's also a short video that does include a brief overview of the budget and what I went through quickly today. The other thing that will be on there is that we have posted a frequently asked questions. All of your testimony, all of the comment cards, if you filled any of those out, I read every single one of them, and we will be responding to them, and we're going to be updating that weekly, so that will be on this website. So please go and check. You can see what your fellow residents have been asking about as we go through each of these town halls, and we're going to be updating that as we go through the entire budget process. So with that, I will kick this back to Claudette to go over some guidelines.
Thank you, Susie. And now that we've heard from the city, it's your time. We want to hear from you. So before we begin the public testimony, however, I want to go over a few ground rules that will ensure that the mayor and her team can hear from as many people as possible. So there are three other ways that you can share your feedback. First is to remember that volunteers are available to distribute and collect the public testimony slips. You can also visit the tables outside to pick up or drop off a public comment card in which you can write down your thoughts. Secondly, we're live streaming today's town hall, so people watching online can also submit your comments or questions. And finally, the city budget survey is still up and collecting responses, and you can visit the survey as noted there on the slide at chicago.gov/2020budget. So before I begin calling up speakers, let's go over some ground rules that I hope that we all can agree agree to. And those rules that are showing are to be respectful. So let's have one speaker at a time. And we also ask that you minimize any sidebar conversations and that you're respectful of other people's feelings, their identities, their perspectives, and their abilities. Also, to be timely, so staying on schedule is everyone's responsibility, and to be courageous, so stay engaged, speak your truth, and experience whatever discomfort that one may have. So next up, I'm going to select names at random to give their public testimony. I'll call up 8 names initially and ask that you stand up behind one of the 2 microphones that are located here in the aisle. Please note that you will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to share your thoughts or to ask questions. You will have how long?
1 minute and 30 seconds.
Very good. Okay, so we're doing good. We're getting there. And so the mayor and her team will do their best to answer their questions, but please, please keep in mind that they're early in the budget process and may not have immediate answers. And members of the mayor's community engagement team will also be on hand to collect your information and follow up with any answers once they become available. So in front of the microphones, there is the countdown clock that you can see that you have the minute and 30 seconds. You can see how much of your time is left. And so you know that game shows are very popular right now, and they are all time. That's what they have in common. But also what they have in common is it's all about money. And so therefore it is fitting that we're here talking about money, and their time runs out on game shows. Your time will also run out here at the Mayor's Budget Town Hall at a minute and 30 seconds. So you've all said that we're going to agree to this. You've all said that you know you have a minute and 30 seconds. And so we are thanking you in advance for keeping to the time. So with that, let's have the first speakers. And so let me ask Nicholas Limbeck, who would like to talk about taxing the rich and the need to revoke TIF and give away to Lincoln Yards. Thank you. So Nick and Roger Romanelli, Kinsey, PMD, Westside Economic Development. Rodney Shelton would like to speak of Crane Chicago Business 2016 article on City Treasurer Kurt Summers uncovering City of Chicago having a $3 billion surplus. So I'm trying to see where people are lining up here. Nicholas Kostafidis, and please excuse me for the mispronunciation of names. And I believe this is housing, expanding the tax base. We have Tom Pace, who's interested in talking about the city buying ComEd. We have Christine Pacin-Zaez, public policy, housing, economic development. We have Brian Zaid, housing costs, job opportunities in the city. And Ronald Jackson would like to speak to trauma-informed city. So with that, let us start with Nicholas Limbeck.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Mayor. My name is Nicholas Limbeck. I'm a fourth grade teacher, bilingual teacher at Berry Elementary School in the Hermosa neighborhood of Chicago. And I care deeply about our school system and about our city services. Right now, we are dealing with schools that, like mine that don't have a full-time nurse every day at our school. We don't have a full-time social worker. And we have class sizes. One class is 33 students, a third grade class, which we're trying to deal with, but we can't with the level of funding and the unequal system of taxing and funding our schools. We talk about shared sacrifice, and that has been our life for in the city. Working class people, middle class people have been doing all the sacrificing, and in one of the richest cities in the world with a GDP close to the level of Switzerland, the rich are not paying their fair share. So we implore you, Mayor, to consider and make some policies that tax the rich. They can afford it. We need a lease tax downtown. We need a head tax. And we can't sacrifice anymore. We need public schools that have a nurse every day, and we need social worker every day in our school. Our kids are dealing with trauma. They need it now, and we need to put it in writing in our contract. So we need to reverse the TIF on Lincoln Yards because it was fraudulently passed.
Thank you, Mr. Limbeck. Thank you.
If I may. So I agree with you regarding the schools 100%, which is exactly why we put together, I think, a very fulsome compensation package for teachers. We have to have our teachers fully supported. We've also made very specific recommendations that we've embedded in our budget to support the increase in nurses, in counselors, in case managers, and librarians. And what we've asked of CTU is partner with us to help create the pipeline so we can actually fill those positions. So we support that 100%.
Thank you. Christina Zayas.
Good morning. So Mayor Lightfoot, we've had the opportunity of meeting before. I've served on your transition team, specifically in the education capacity. And I'm actually here to speak about the need for investment in infant early childhood mental health. We know we have an issue with community violence across our city. And while the headlines say that homicides are going down, according to analysis that we've done at the Erickson Institute, we see that actually the exposure to toxic stress has gone up for young children 0 to 5. We have 176,000 children in our city that are under the age of 5, and 105,000 of them live in the 37 community areas that had more than 3 homicides in 2018. So that exposure has gone up despite losing young child population. And so what I want to ask of you is to invest in early childhood mental health, specifically right here in this neighborhood in Humboldt Park, Erickson, the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, the Puerto Rican Agenda, and the Department of Family and Support Services have installed a center for children and families within a child care center. This provides behavioral and mental health services for children 0 to 5 in the context of their families, in the context of our community, understanding the trauma that people are not only experiencing through violence, but also through racism and colonization. And so I'm asking that you continue to support these efforts, invest across our city, especially in those
Thank
that
you.
Have the large...
Thank you. Tom Pace.
Thank you very much for your comments, and we're on it.
I want to say, first of all, that Chicago is supposed to be a world-class city. We have too many issues, too many quality of life problems. Some pointers I want to make. It's important to use different revenue sources. Marijuana, casinos to fund to keep burden off residents. Close corporate loopholes. Corporations should pay their fair share. Keep affordable housing. Property taxes, lower property taxes, better transportation in the city. I'll work with the state to get more funding, including jobs. I'm a public service worker. I have a master's degree. I'm paid in the low 40s in salary. This is a state problem, probably more than a city problem, but a lot of things in this city are just ridiculous. I am very concerned about the increase of taxes, cuts in vital services, potential for a declining quality of life in the city, and reduction of our democratic values in a world-class city like Chicago. So please work with the state, work with the constituencies to make a world-class city better.
Thank you. Let's go to this side of the room. Tell us your name, please.
Nicholas Katsifatos.
Go on, mister.
So my name's Nicholas. I am a Chicago native. I grew up in Chicago. I went to Lane Tech, Northeastern. And the biggest challenge I see in Chicago is that when I drive through my neighborhoods and I drive through the city, I see dark storefronts and underutilized buildings. And part of that challenge is that to do business in Chicago, it's extremely difficult. If I want to change the zoning in a storefront, I've got to spend $5,000 to $10,000 to make that happen. Just to ask the question, $1,000 application fee, $3,000 to $5,000 for attorneys, mailers that have to go out 250 feet. In some places, it's particularly difficult, like the 35th Ward, he wants 750 feet. Rosa makes it an obstacle to open up businesses in dark storefronts. Now, renovating buildings that already exist, if I can make it economically feasible to invest in that, I should be able to. I think that locals that want to invest in their community, that are from the community, should be given zoning leeway. Meaning that if you are from the community and you invest in your community, Chicago should side with the optimists, with the people who see a better opportunity tomorrow. It's not to say that we're changing the community if we're from our community and investing in it. And that takes a shot at aldermanic prerogative, increases the tax base, increases business activity and sales tax, unleash local Chicago optimism. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's have Sylvia Reed, who wants to talk about lights, and Michael Outlet, who wants to talk about creating revenue streams. If the two of you will find your ways to one of the two microphones. Thank you. Sir, go ahead.
Yes, I'm Rodney Shelton. I'm with the Chicago Fire Department. I'm a West Sider. And what I want to talk about is the $3 billion surplus that Kurt Summers had come upon when he was city treasurer. And this is an article from 2016 Crane Chicago Business. I'm going to read a quick portion. Despite having limited power over the city's policy and its purse strings, Summers dove headfirst into the weeds of the treasurer's office. He and his team spent the better part of the year untangling masterful spiderweb of bank accounts, closing more than 200 that were dormant or redundant, consolidating the rest, and netting the city more than $100 million in investment earnings. That is a boon for taxpayers. And the fact that it hasn't been done until Summers got into office is a little surprising. Executive Director of the City for Tax and Budget Accountability, a Chicago-based bipartisan think tank. Meanwhile, Summers found that Chicago had $3 billion in cash lying around, nearly 5 months of cash flow. After crunching the numbers in this Hyde Park, Kenwood home in the wee hours, we realized that most cities have only 45 days of liquidity on hand. We effectively had money in a mattress, Summers says, so we invested $1.5 billion and made millions. So where's the money?
I'm not familiar with that particular article, but I can assure you we do not have a $3 billion surplus. We wouldn't be talking about many of the issues that we're talking about today. We wouldn't have an affordable housing crisis. We wouldn't have shortages of health care and mental health services if we were sitting on $3 billion surplus. I don't know what that article is talking about, but I can assure you my team has been through every nook and cranny, every line item, every budget. That article is just flat out wrong.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Over here.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Roger Romanelli of the Fulton Market Association and the Kinsey Corridor Committee. I have a petition from 141 residents and businesses who want our city to have no budget deficit. We want to generate bold new revenues through economic development. For the West Side Kinsey PMD, please, please delay approval of the proposed plan and allow our community to present the facts to your new planning commissioner. Lincoln Yards is 55 acres. The PMD is 800 acres. The stakes are staggering. In the east section next to the Ashland CTA station, there is 2 million square feet of land. Representing only 5% of this land, there are few industrial companies that want to keep the PMD, while the vast majority of people want PMD repeal for bold new economic development and tax revenues for our city without displacing industry. In the West area, The city will lose significant tax revenues by eliminating existing opportunities for service businesses. There is at least 1 million square feet of available space in the planning department. They have never justified taking away these service businesses from thousands of PMD employees and Westside residents. Instead, details have been flip-flopped behind the scenes. Please, we have waited 21 years for PMD reform. The wrong plan can't be rushed in 50 days without public input.
Thank
Please.
You, sir, for your time. Thank you.
Can I ask you if you've got a specific letter? There should be a table outside for the mayor's office. Can you make sure you leave that with them? Thank you.
I want to ask Tracy Gordon, who wants to talk about saving the city money on health care, and Adrian, who wants to talk about employee savings, if you would make your way to the microphone, sir.
My name is Tom Pace. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. I believe the city of Chicago should buy out ComEd and make it a public utility, because public control of ComEd means that we will be able to make a faster transition to green and renewable energy sources than if it were under private control, which makes decisions based on off of what is and isn't profitable. If we are to be serious about the crisis of climate change, we have to understand that there are no market-based solutions, only ones out of willpower and political courage. Furthermore, public control of the utility will help us ensure lower and cheaper rates for working families and communities. In a time of grotesque income and wealth inequalities, we must have the clarity and honesty to start demanding that wealthy individuals and corporations pay their fair share of taxes. On the topic of revenue, the city must end the practice of selling and privatizing public assets and services to meet our budgetary solution, like the horrendous parking meter deal. Services and institutions like our public schools, emergency first responders, our water.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. To my left. Gentleman in the hat.
Ronald Jackson. Mayor, I'm not here to talk on my usual topic. I am here because after going back into the community, there was a question asked, and that is, why is the city trying to redevelop or relabel Healthy Chicago 2.0? Healthy Chicago 2.0 was a failure because 252 partners gathered together under what was used to be patronage in the city of Chicago, and basically they lost out because of state budget cuts. The community has asked me to come here today and ask you why all of a sudden there is a program called Trauma-Informed 2025, yes. Okay. The question there, and that is, in black and neighborhoods of color, why does everything have to be a crisis? Why does everything have to be danger? Why does everything have to be in fear of safety and all of the rest? Why can't you develop some programs that actually put equity in the community and make sure that there is safety, that there is something that actually does not have breaking news or something that's actually endangering children, seniors, and especially that group between 25 and 55 that are struggling the hardest to try to exist. Even in your conversations, you never...
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We'll come here.
Hi. Gordon. We have an opportunity that would save the city approximately $70 million a year on health care expenses. The plan has already been approved by the state's attorney
general. We increase the volume of her mic. Is that possible?
Mic volume, please.
Maybe you can speak a little closer.
Is that better?
That's better.
Yeah. Okay. We have an opportunity that can
Let's
save.
Make sure she start, gets her time started again.
You'll restart the time?
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We have an opportunity that can save the city approximately $70 million a year on health care expenses. It doesn't require any changes to the plan that's currently in place. It doesn't cost anything to implement. It's already been approved by the state's attorney general, and it could eliminate co-pays, co-insurance, and deductibles for eligible employees. And we would like the opportunity at some point to discuss the plan in further detail with you. Thank you.
Can you just, again, go to the table outside that's the mayor's office table and leave your information, and we'll reach out.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If Jamie Caesar, who wants to talk about pensions,
yes,
and June Beverlier will make their way to the mic. June wants to talk about noise ordinances and police pensions. Sir, over here at the microphone.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning to fellow taxpayers. My name is Mike Outley. First, congratulations on your 50-ward win. I really appreciate that as a former precinct captain. We can solve this financial deficit. We have some plans, my company CAGAS, that will allow you to have a product that will be made here, distributed from here, create the workforce that will install and maintenance. If you're interested, we'd love to talk to you about it. And some of these solutions that are tied to revenue generation, utilizing city unused assets. So you have everything at your disposal. It's just that, like the light, it hasn't been turned on. So when we turn it on, you'll see a vast volume of revenue coming from three or four different streams that will eliminate your debt structure and solve all the other revenue deficit problems. So again, my name is Mike Outley. If you're interested, CAG is to help you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Sir, here.
In regards to saving money, how about rewarding supervisors, city employees, if they come up with ideas of how to save money? Give them a percentage of what they save. They say, we don't need this many employees. You let go three employees. That's $75,000. Give them 10, 15, 20%. Whatever they're able to save, whistleblowers, make them supervisors. Those would be the best supervisors out there. I'm done in 30 seconds.
Thank you. Let's have Alice Lara, who wants to talk about property tax, as well as Renata Perjerski, talk about ride share fees and gun insurance. If you'll make your way to the microphone. Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Sylvia Reed, and I am a happily retired senior citizen and retired 15 years ago. When I wake up in the morning and I look out the window, the first thing I see are lights burning, street lights burning around my home. I walk or drive to the grocery store, wherever, street lights burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why isn't anyone holding Commonwealth Edison accountable for the money we are paying them? Or are they giving these services out free? If so, they can reduce my bill because I pay too much. But seriously, this is a disgrace how Commonwealth Edison, and I understand someone mentioned this at the last meeting, they're getting over on us. Why isn't anybody addressing this? I urge each one of you, when you leave here, you're walking down the street, driving down the street, I assure you, before you get home, you're going to see lights burning on half the streets you pass. It is unacceptable, and it's time for somebody to say, as senior citizens, or as citizens, period, enough is enough. Commonwealth Edison's has made millions of dollars off of us, and it's time to put a stop to that. And that would help not only the city budget, but the state budget. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
J.D., can you get her information and find out the general area in which she lives? Thank you.
Thank you. Right here.
Good morning. My name is Renata Pajerska. I have a few ideas how to save money. First of all, introducing gun insurance and hefty penalties for those who do not have it. This would bring revenue for mitigating all the medical, police, security, and whatnot fees, following up the gun victims, shooting victims. Also, online shopping fees so that we don't drive retail businesses away from the city because now they're just walking away. Also, the rush hour tax for ride shares so that people are more encouraged to use the CTA and public transportation, which brings more revenue to the city. And please do stop expanding those bike lanes and start investing in improving roads, bridges, infrastructure. It's falling apart. Bike lines are dangerous. It frustrates people. I do ride bikes every day, and they frustrate me because they create a false security image on both riders and drivers. Also, the property tax increase would hurt greatly renters as well, which would drive away people from the city. It is not encouragement, because once an owner has to pay more property tax, they have to increase the renters' fees, and also those who least can afford those rents will not be able to do so anymore and will not bring the revenue to the city. Also, invest in youth programs. I've been involved in ACE programming and engineering architectural through volunteering. There are a lot of companies who are open.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Let's have Mr. and Ms. Sallys, S-A-U-L-Y-S, come, who's interested in talking about affordable housing and homelessness. Oliver Fultz, if you'll make your way, talking about small businesses and food trucks. Julie Zolot, if you'll make your way, talking about running the city efficiently. And Dr. Judith Singleton, who wants to talk about housing in the city. So if the four of you will make your way to one of the two microphones, that would be great. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, to be a little bit more specific, so you have many bars that are making very good money, and they're not paying their fair share of property taxes. Their property taxes, just because they have apartments over their business, are paying the same amount as me and other neighbors. And also, 311 is doing a very good job. You don't need 50 aldermen.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Oh, hi. My name's Oliver Fultz. I live in downtown. I just want to thank the mayor and everyone for being here. I think this is a great trend. I would just say in a general comment, the biggest resource, the biggest budget help is the people here. And I just salute everyone in Chicago and the mayor for realizing, for listening to us and realizing we're the greatest resource here. So I would encourage that. With that in mind, I just have a very specific question. It's not related to my business, but I've noticed when I travel around America a lot, there are a lot of food trucks in L.A. In New York, there's a food truck on every block. When I looked it up in Chicago, there are 70 food trucks. And I've talked to taxi drivers who's tried to start businesses here with food trucks. And so my question is there anything the city can do just to cut down on the bureaucracy? Because as a previous speaker said, it's hard for the people starting out to move up, and that's what keeps the city alive, is the people on the bottom pushing up, not the people on the top doing well. So I would just encourage the city to do everything possible just to reduce all the regulations. Because I had a taxi driver who tried to get an ice cream truck, and he said, well, you get a permit here, but then you get a penalty there, because there's just no way of navigating the system. So anything the city can do to just let go and stop holding back the people who want to do better, I would just say that would be a wonderful thing.
Thank you.
Sir, thank you very much for those comments, and you're 100% right that the greatest asset we have in the city is our people, and we are working on specific reforms regarding the red tape that small businesses in particular find. I take the point of the gentleman who spoke earlier, how much it costs just to get in business in the city. It's absurd, and we are working on some very specific reforms around that, so thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is June Burweiler. When Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor, he went after the so-called little stuff, the piddly stuff, and enforced these piddly laws, and the crime rate went down. Some of these piddly laws include noise ordinances, and I get so ticked off, to put it in as nice a language as I can, when I can't sleep in my own bed because some clown decides to carouse. A couple years ago, I called the police. These people were making racket at 1:30 in the morning. The yard was full of them. The police came. They didn't even get out of the car. If you would find these people and enforce these ordinances, maybe you wouldn't have to jack up property tax so often. Make the people who break the law pay for the law. And the way this yard was so full of people, if the police would have issued a citation, you'd have a gold mine right there. Now, it's not going to be a source of revenue for long, because some of the carousers are going to get smart and they're going to say, I got better things to spend my money on. But everybody knows sleep deprivation impairs judgment. So we need to be able to sleep in our own bed. Let them go to a bar.
Thank you, ma'am. And to our participants.
Before we go on, folks, listen, I just want to reemphasize one of the points in the ground rules from before. I appreciate a variety of opinions, and we're not always going to agree on everything, but we must be respectful. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor. My name is Dr. Judith Singleton. I'm a professor at DePaul University, and I, with a team of faculty, did a small pilot study looking at the issue of life expectancy in our city. For those of you who don't know, Chicago has a 30-year gap in life expectancy based on geography, where you live. If you live in Streeterville, you're likely to live 30 years longer than somebody who lives in Inglewood. So we did this study in two neighborhoods to start, and I spoke with residents in both neighborhoods, and the number one issue that came up was the issue of the lack of affordable housing. I'm not talking about... And the thing is, we talk a lot about homelessness. These are working people. And I have to say, I live in the second ward, and the rent is increasing. We are being pushed out. Okay? And so we've got to do something. If it's rent control, we got to do something, and we got to do it now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's have Nancy Curran, who wants to talk about how to cut the budget, and Natasha Brown wants to talk about public safety and the CPS budget. If you'll make your way to the microphone, please, and thank you. Right here.
Hi, I'm Jamie Caesar. I live right in the neighborhood. I know that you have to raise taxes. I appreciate you taking on the responsibility that so many mayors before you haven't done. But when that happens, how are you going to keep citizens from fleeing the city because of the high taxes?
That is the tough task and balancing that we have to have. I said at my State of the City address I wanted to use two principles in thinking about how we generate efficiencies and revenue. The first is to relieve the burden on those least able to afford it. That's why I'm hoping City Council passes our first step in this coming Wednesday and fines and fees reform. But the other threshold is making sure that we're not doing things that drive business out of the city. We have to be a city of growth. If we grow, we grow the tax base, which means we increase the necessity of increasing taxes on folks. So those are the two things that we are really focused on in directing all of our policy. And I agree with you, we can't keep being a city that's losing people. And part of the reason that we're losing people is we have not invested enough in our neighborhoods. And we are very, very focused on that. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Julie Zolot.
I'm sorry.
And I live in the 47th Ward. I guess my life expectancy is pretty good, although I'm struggling very much with affordable housing as well. I wanted to talk today, it's not so much about a question, a comment, that we see these inefficiencies, especially you see a high-profile case in the news and a huge settlement being paid out by the city, and people get indignant. And I've seen the same response to a lot of the frustrations about these inefficiencies, and it's sort of capitalized in another incident. Lately, I had a water department problem. There was a leak in the parkway, and the water department came to repair it. And there were multiple trucks and workers, and one truck had a worker whose sole job was to drive the truck. And so everybody else had to wait while he took the truck, drove it to be dumped out, and then came back. And all the other workers were just waiting for an hour. And the answer is the union has a rule. The union has a rule. And unions are good. They're very important. They protect workers, and we want our workers protected. But when there are rules that create expense, inefficiency, then, you know, union workers, they're citizens also. And we're all concerned about that, and we need to negotiate away these rules, and maybe it has to do with some of the rules with other bureaucratic problems, too. We need to negotiate away these rules that prevent efficiencies.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
All right. My name is Mark Chalice, and I want to emphasize the need for the mayor to follow through on her campaign promise to create a dedicated revenue stream to address homelessness in Chicago. I experienced homelessness for 6 years before receiving a housing voucher from a pilot program 2 years ago. Before being housed, I found it very difficult to find and work a job at all because of the great difficulty in finding and keeping a job in that state of living. I am now working 2 jobs and paying taxes to support the city. Friends I have left behind on the streets are not only still homeless, but many are in a downwardly spiraling, deteriorating state as well, as homelessness greatly exacerbates any health or personal problems one may have already had before or that they may acquire after becoming homeless. Several of my friends have died from conditions that couldn't be properly treated without their having an adequate place to recover. The Housing First method of homelessness policy, that is providing housing and wraparound services to the homeless first and foremost, is not only the most effective in bringing positive results, but it is also the most cost-effective to the public purse. To leave the homeless on the street is 3 times more expensive than to provide each homeless person with an apartment and a caseworker, in large part because of the uncontrolled and unchecked compounding of health problems of the homeless and the otherwise unnecessary law enforcement procedures and actions against them. Recently, the mayor said that the real estate transfer tax should be used to fill the budget deficit, which is not in line with her commitment during the campaign to use the resources for homelessness and affordable housing. Before this administration, it seemed the homeless couldn't be housed because still other priorities took precedence. Tomorrow, there will be still another reason why we have to have different priorities and abandon the homeless to their fate on the streets. Those living on the streets now don't have time to wait for the ideal moment to house them.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you.
Sir, I just want to correct one thing that you said, and I won't speed read. My commitment to addressing the huge, significant problem of homelessness has never wavered. Never wavered. And we must have wraparound services. We must address not just the people that are on the street, but also the people that are living in housing instability, that don't know from day to day where they're actually going to lay their head at night. So my commitment on that and my resolve is resolute. We have a difference of opinion about how we get there, but of course we need significant new resources to address this growing and challenging problem that I think is a moral responsibility for us as a city to address. So there's no difference in my resolve to address this issue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. If we'll have Jack Williams, who wants to talk about parking meters, Gerard Mover, who wants to talk about reducing crime, Patricia Powell, who wants to talk about affordable recreational activities, and Kay Sasso, who wants to talk about property tax. If the four of you will make your way to one of the two microphones, and we'll go here.
Good morning. My name is Natasha Brown, and I'm going to piggyback on something he said about the homeless. What I don't want to see is funding cuts for public safety in the sense of our programming for our youth, for our safe passage workers, for our mentoring programs that we have within the Chicago Public School System. But I also oversee the LGBTQ youth homeless shelter down the street, and I want to see an increase of funding for our youth because we do have LGBTQ youth sleeping under the rails at the Blue Line. So, and we only have a certain amount of capacity, so making sure that we're also including that in our budgets in the future. I also oversaw the Puerto Rico Refugee Project, where we had people coming in due to the hurricane and having a welcoming center within the city, but also I haven't heard anything for our neighbors, for the people of the Bahamas that are also going to come in. So if we could also look at those things, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Mayor. My name is Nancy Curran.
A little closer to the microphone.
My name is Nancy Curran. And another reason people are fleeing, obviously, the city, obviously, is because of CPS. 52% of the budget goes there. And if you want to save money, I think you should put your eyes on 42 West Madison and 1 North Dearborn. There's a lot of fat there, and you could really cut it and make the schools a lot more efficient. We can't forget about the ISBE corrective action. The state had to come in because of the disabled children, and just this week what's going on, everybody's having sex with our kids in the schools. And personally, my group, which is called NoMoreSidelines.com, we have had to contact OCR, ARDC, we've had to FOIA, we've had to FERPA, we've had to call the fire marshal, we've had to call the attorney general's office, we've had to call ISBE and the alderman just to get help with CPS. I don't know what you see in Janice Jackson. I don't see what you see, but I really think you should start looking a little bit more closely at CPS. Right now, we have we had an appointment to meet with Pam Whitner. She was an attorney at your office, and then something happened and she was no longer there. We have a packet of information here, and we've tried to meet with Sybil Madison, and she isn't meeting with us. And this is for her. I wondered if I could bring it down to you so you could give it to her.
What you can do is you can give it to JD, who works on my staff.
Okay, please look at CPS. It's very important.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Yes. You may go.
Okay. I am Gerard Moore, a lifelong resident. Let us end crime and violence in our city. Let us give people new resources and a new sense of hope. Let's save our families. There are 37 tax increment finance districts on the west side of Chicago. We are sitting on millions and millions of dollars. I have two ideas. One, give residents 6 weeks of paid training at $15 an hour for a week, for 40 weeks. People need training and preparation to get jobs, but can't participate in non-paid training because they can't afford to. They are working several part-time jobs to make ends meet, and because they are not putting in enough, and because of that, they are not putting in enough time with their children. Use TIF funds for paid job training and placement services. Give people skills and hope. Number two, we need a 24-hour crisis counseling center in every pocket of the city where violence is high. We can renovate the Bobby E. Wright Mental Health Center on Kearsing and Madison as a free 24-hour crisis counseling center, a place for children and families to be safe, a place for people to pull back from conflict. Thank you for keeping your promise on transparency and giving the community an opportunity to speak their piece. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's have Charlie Serrano, who wants to talk about economic development, and Kimball. Sorry, I can't read your last name, but after-school programs and outcomes budgeting, if you'll make your way to the microphone.
Can we call a few more people? So they care about?
We have Deborah Claiborne, who wants to talk about affordable housing, and Annette Britton, who wants to talk about community voices in East Garfield, Carol Dorf, Lincoln Yards TIF, and Michelle McGee, who wants to talk about neighborhood block clubs. So if you will make your way to the microphones. Yes.
Good morning. My name is Jack Williams. I want to talk about the parking meters. On May 14, 2018, the Sun-Times reported that the parking meters were on pace to recoup their entire investment by 2021 with 62 years left in their lease. So I guess my question is, what public asset are you going to sell off next to cover the budget? Okay, good.
Thank you. Yes. A little louder or closer to the mic.
I'm close. Okay, now we're
live. There we are.
We're live. Good morning. My name is Michelle McGee. I'm the president of the West Chatham-8 Block Club, also a member of the West Chatham Improvement Association. For years, I've been block club president for 10 years, I've been trying to develop the 8300 block of Wentworth. It's never been developed. I've been trying to work with Alderman Brookins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We, the various people of all kinds of community organizations, need some support to develop these vacant properties, which often are fly dumping and other illegal, nefarious activities. And if they were developed, that would not happen. I've worked closely with the entire development of the 83rd Street Chatham Market, and we also need the businesses that exist to be a good neighbor, whether it's keeping the weeds down, the lots clean. So while we're taxing and fining residents, the businesses also have to be a good neighbor. The motto in West Chatham 8 Block Club is to have a good neighbor, to be one, left, right, east, west, north, south, know your neighbor. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Hold on 1 second. Ma'am, if you would, can you please give your contact information and your specific ideas to our table, the mayor's office table, out in the lobby so we can follow up with you?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes.
Madam Mayor, my name is Charlie Serrano. I'm a member of the Puerto Rican Agenda here of Chicago in Humboldt Park. I'm also a strategic planner for Housing Plus. I'm also a member of Leadership Greater Chicago. I was born and raised in the city of Chicago. I was a high school dropout in the 70s, and I became a planner and a lobbyist in Springfield. I have seen the city develop, underdevelop, destroyed, and I have a lot of hope for you and the staff that you have picked to try to bring back the city to the communities. I want to commend you and Mr. Cox in Economic Development, our very own Marissa Navarra, and also our local and very own Juan Carlos Linares to take us to where you want the city to go. But I want to let you know that local influence and local control is very, very key in our communities. And in the areas of planning and development, we need to get developers to make a contribution into these local communities where they're developing. In terms of these areas like Park District and City Colleges that are detached from you, you have the influence to put the right people to make those decisions. And we have a disastrous relationship with the Park District. Humboldt Park needs to be in the North District and not in a Central District, and there's a whole bunch of problems with that. But I want to close by saying that Housing Plus is a program that will make use of 2,000 apartments in the basement.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Let's have Claudia Gonzalez, who wants to talk about budget priorities, David Doerr, who wants to talk about police defense, and Ben Umans, who wants to talk about the social effect of putting citizens against city workers, Leslie Wilson, who wants to talk about the budget, and Carolina Herrera, progressive revenue. So if you will make your way to one of the two microphones. Yes, sir.
Good morning, and again, congratulations, Mayor Lightfoot. This is for both yourself and for Susie. I've mentioned previously, I'm Dr. Kimball Adian, a scientist as well as a physician. As a physician, the motto Safe Haven, again, is a penny of prevention is worth a dollar of cure. And if we reduce gang crime and murders 10%, we could save over $400 million annually. If we have after-school programs for all the kids and job programs for everybody on probation and parole, we can cut crime and murders 50% this year alone. We would be saving lives. We would also be saving over $2 billion annually. Susie, outcomes-based budgeting is the way to look at outcomes and not just services rendered. And Scott Wilgersbach is willing to meet with Michael Babelski, myself, and we invite you to join in. You were kind enough to have JD meet with me, but at the end of the day, Mayor Lightfoot and Susie, you're the ones who make the decisions, so we'd still like to be able to meet with you. You can be a truly transformational mayor and be a model for not just the country but the world on how to get these things right. So God bless you, and let's hope that happens.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yes, right here. You may go.
Hello. My name is Deborah Claiborne, and I'm here on behalf of the Chicago Rehab Network. And thank you this morning to the Mayor, Honorable Mayor Lightfoot. I'm here to really to talk about a couple things here, because we need to really know that housing stability for all Chicagoans needs to happen. And under that auspices, we need to understand that we need to support and preserve affordable housing, rental housing owned by non-for-profits, because we really feel that non-for-profits have really been forgotten in this scenario of really of bringing affordable housing into existence here in Chicago. If we look back at the last couple years, how tax credits have been allocated throughout the city, it has been unfortunate. And the people who are really, really invested in our communities are the non-for-profit housing developers. And they need to have their place. And also, we need to understand that the housing department, and we really, really thank you for having a separate Department of Housing to have it restored. But also, we need sufficient funding.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Yes.
My name is Beth Britton, and my family has lived on the West Side, starting with my great-grandmother, for nearly 100 years. And Mayor, our community is being overrun by outside individual interest. Yet there has been little or no input from East Garfield Park community residents who are and will be most directly impacted. Our voices have been muted and displaced by quote-unquote community partners who sit at the table. Over 130, I'm sorry for her point, but over 130 not-for-profits operate on the West Side and claim to do great things. And yet our communities are exceedingly worse than ever. How many city, state, and federal dollars have come to the West Side, and what is there to show for it? What's the ROI? Clearly, money is not enough. We ask that you halt all these individual plans that are happening right now. They're trying to push through on the West Side. There needs to be a clear public plan, process, and accountability system. You know, in standard classic business terms, that means a PMO office. You know, and I have a proposal for, I propose an East Garfield Park PMO office so that we, the people of East Garfield Park, we demand a vibrant, economically sustainable, economically balanced, safe, children and senior-friendly community.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Yes.
My name is Carolina Herrera. Hello, everybody, and hello, Mayor Lightfoot. I graduated from Kelvin Park this year, and if you didn't know, Mayor Lightfoot, where you live in Logan Square, it's part of the Kelvin Park boundaries. I know this because I live about four blocks away from you. So the children of your neighborhood, KP is their neighborhood school. So don't you want to invest in the school more? Since 2009, KP has had to get a new principal every 2 years. When I was there, we had two deans in a school year. We didn't have a librarian, didn't have enough teachers, no nurse, no gym teacher, no assistant principal, and there was one guidance counselor that had to work with over 400 students. We're in the Hermosa neighborhood, the Northwest Side, and I really feel at times that KP is the brokest school on this side. And also, I'm studying to be a teacher myself, so in 5 years, what am I gonna do with my students when I don't have money? So just Mayor Lightfoot, I just want to say, please stop giving our schools money to luxury developers.
Thank you.
And,
yes.
Hi, my name is Leslie Willis, and I live in Albany Park neighborhood. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak. I want to speak about the unbalancedness of this budget. Like, this is the chart here that was on the website that we're talking about today. And there's a disproportionate amount going to the police and nothing for the basic services. I mean, the police are out of control. They often hurt the communities more than they help them. On the question of what should come first, the basic needs of the people need to come first. On the way over here today, I travel by a huge tent city that's now almost hidden, but I saw it for the first time, tents being propped up. And this is not the only one in our city. You have to make now over $23 an hour to be able to afford an apartment in this city. The taxes for homeowners have gone through the roof. We, the people, are the taxpayers. We are the taxpayers every time we go to the store. And we're absorbing the price of this housing. The investment money that we talk about, and I'm glad to hear you talk about investment in our communities, but what does it mean? It means, I think, what the young lady was saying just before me, that a lot of times this investment money means that it's for the developers. It comes in and fixes everything up for the developers. So I look.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Carol Dorf, and I live in the Second Ward. I want to first thank you, Mayor Lightfoot, for upending your entire life to lead our city. And I think for the first time in many years, I'm really hopeful and, dare I say, optimistic about righting our city and eliminating corruption. On the topic of equity, though, we've now learned that Lincoln Yards would not have qualified for $1 billion in TIF had the vote been delayed by a month. I'm sure that money and the interest that we're going to pay for that money going to Sterling Bay could be better used to help with city services. This is absolutely insane that they are getting this money. What, if anything, can be done to reverse this corrupt deal?
Thank you. Thank you. Let's have Gladys Diaz, who wants to talk about budget revenue, Adrian, who wants to talk about parking areas, Lucky, and I'm sorry I can't pronounce your last name, but who wants to talk about slumlords, and Joanne Becker, who wants to talk about identity savings for pensions. So if you will make your way to one of the two microphones. The mayor has chosen not to to respond. The gentleman in the blue, if you will proceed.
Yes. Hi, Mayor Lightfoot. I left the Uncle Sam outfit at home, but he's still looking for $838 million, as you know. I had an opportunity to meet you and Amy, and I have to give credit where credit's due. On aldermanic prerogative, you signed that on the first day. So, and outside business activity. So, well done, and hopefully we can go forward from here. What I'm going to speak on is police. Now, in your budget, you talked about $90 million of the $838, which is about 11%. And unfortunately, that goes towards lawsuits. But with the ACLU, well, let me phrase it this way. When somebody files a complaint against the police, is there any way that they would be required to fill out an affidavit and have it notarized? Because what's happening, unfortunately, being all fair to the police, if somebody files a frivolous lawsuit, unfortunately, that's adding to that $90 million. But on the flip side, myself personally, there was an article here in the Tribune that talked about $212 million for outside law firms. And as far as with these lawsuits, myself, personally, as I've stated, I am a pro se litigant. I am in the process of settling, and there's unnecessary cost with attorneys to go on with my case. I'm experiencing this personally. So my question is twofold with the AC, with affidavits. Can people have to file those and have them notarized? And what about these frivolous lawsuits?
Thank you.
Sir, there is an affidavit requirement. It's been the law of the state for quite some time. Now, there's ways in which, and we are encouraging investigations when people are reluctant. Obviously, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but a lot of people are offended by having to sign a sworn affidavit to allege misconduct on the part of the police. So there are ways in which there's investigations that can be done, but the affidavit requirement's been in place for quite some time, I believe since the middle 2000s.
Hi,
thank you. Just let me remind us, ladies and gentlemen, let me remind us of the rules of engagement, that we would be respectful of everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Ladies and gentlemen, please. We want to be respectful of everyone's opinions. Ladies and gentlemen, please. We're asking, ladies and gentlemen, we will hear your comments appropriately. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please fill out a card if you want to speak? Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, please. You may go. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Mayor. I am Joanne Becker, who you met at the March 2017 at Justice Advisory Council meeting when you told the attendees about the Chicago Police Federal Report. We are both University of Chicago alumni, you the law school and me the business school. I can approach finance professors about an internship project to research the city, the county, and the state organizations and agencies to identify where there are opportunities to save money by eliminating duplications, redundancies, inefficiency, etc., in these three levels of government. The money which could be saved could be used to fund pensions in all three levels of government, and this study would be no cost to any of those agencies by a non-politically motivated group of people who would be welcomed by the 49 other states who also have underfunded pensions, and this notoriety would be welcomed by the University of Chicago Business School. I have reviewed this with Scott Wagensbach and Bridget Dagan, who support my proposed idea. I already had a meeting with Toni Preckwinkle and her CFO, which was I was able to arrange in less than a week. To do this, I must have a 15-minute meeting with you, which I requested over 2 months ago through your email system, and I've heard nothing. I personally know JB, our governor, and I'm confident I can get a 15-minute meeting with him. How do I get a meeting?
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Ma'am, if you go to the mayor's office table, actually, Nubia's coming right behind you, reach out to her and we'll get it on the books.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Ben Humans, and I'm looking back at the budget forecast that was distributed at the beginning, and so much of the shortfall comes from compensation and pensions. And part of the presentation in the beginning of the program today was about how much of that gap really comes from past investments that were not made in the system. And sort of more as a general question, maybe you can speak to how in the process of going forward, when so much tax pain is going to be felt in order to support our city workers who provide so many important services that we all really care about, how we avoid the kind of corrosive social effect of turning taxpayers against city workers whose efforts we all rely on to invest in our communities and take the city forward.
Thank you.
Sir, thank you very much for your comments. Look, we're never going to turn our back on city workers. The city workers work hard every single day. They are the backbone of many of our neighborhoods, the working class and middle class. So we've got to come together as a city. That's why I've also talked about coming together as a state to once and for all solve our pension problem. We've kicked the can down the road. We're at the end. The can doesn't exist anymore. We've got to get it done. But we can't do that by villainizing our workers. And I'm not going to let that happen.
Thank you. Before you start, ma'am, let's have Tom Geis.
1 second.
Thank you for that comment. And to add to the mayor, we are looking at also all the efficiencies that we can. We are working with all of our city departments as part of this budget to make sure that we provide all the critical services while still being as efficient as possible. So we are definitely looking at that and working on that as part of the budget.
Thank you. Let's have Tom Geisak, who wants to talk about the budget, Juan Calderon, who wants to talk about public health,
T.E. Harris, who wants to talk about the population decline, and Alice Wozniak, who wants to talk about city services. If you'll make your way to the microphones. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. My name is Gladys Diaz, and I'd like to say a general hello to Mayor Lightfoot and my fellow Chicagoans. I wish to propose a revenue idea to aid in the effort of helping to reduce our budgetary woes. I propose the following idea, a City of Chicago gift card, cash card. Just like your regular gift card, these cards would be solely used to pay for city services. What does this mean? Anyone can purchase them at assigned locations and use them for City of Chicago facilities sites where cost is involved. Example, the Park District, museums, City of Chicago downtown garage parking, City of Chicago vehicle sticker site. Any and all programs, services under the umbrella of the City of Chicago. While attending my neighborhood park, I observed a sign that stated no checks, no cash, credit card only for park activities fee programming. The City of Chicago gift card would allow those people who do not have a credit card an opportunity to pay for these programs, especially immigrant families. The city would make money by charging a modest activation fee or the issuer fee that comes with using such a card. Businesses and corporations could buy them in bulk and disperse them to neighborhood organizations, and I just see this as a way for everyone to participate in the various programs that we have in our city, and that families, I see too many children seated outside whose parents, single parents who don't have credit cards, whose children watch other children go in for programs or other things, and other parents have said to me, my child who gets that chronic red light ticket, I would like to give them this kind of card as opposed to money and see them taking the money to a concert. I know they would pay that bill. So when you started this inquiry, you asked for ideas, and this is something that I think might benefit the city as a whole. Thank you for your time, and I'm proud of all the young people who are here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go here.
Hello. Hello. Thank you, Mayor, for having this today. I wouldn't miss it. I'm honored, and I'm happy that you're here. When I met you in February at the Roby, I told you I want you to win. So I want you to win. I am a third-generation Chicagoan. I live in the First Ward. I've been here for 22 years. I'm being priced out. My mortgage is $980 with principal and interest. My tax bill is $1,500 a month. The math doesn't add up. We're being priced out. The rubber stamps, the aldermen that have been voted out, like Joe Marino, they have not done anything to help us. Daniel Espada is paralyzed. He has no power as a new progressive, and we're stymied. And I want you to try and think of some ideas. There are communities, as our population are leaving, over 167 people leave every day, City of Chicago. 58,000 people leave annually. And as we're basically trying to get blood from a turnip, the taxing, you say you don't want us to be nickel and dime. We are. My water bill, I'm on a payment plan. It's over $5,000. Tax bill, $15,000. Then I have to pay for the state fees that have increased. How can you create some opportunities in the neighborhoods that are quote-unquote thriving? We were promised all of the new tax bases with all these high-rises coming up and down the corridor in Milwaukee. I ask you to please figure out a way to stop taxing us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, can you please see Vance Henry, who's right there? He's down here. Please give him your information, and we're going to work with you to figure out what's going on. That doesn't make any the amount of taxes that you're paying versus what your mortgage is, that doesn't make any sense. And obviously there's some other things that we can help you with concerning your water bill.
Thank you. Yes.
Mayor Lightfoot, my name is Juan Calderon, and thank you for hosting this budget town hall. I am a member of the Chicago Board of Health. I'm here to speak on behalf of the black and brown communities. And just last week, we had a press conference with Alderman Raymond Lopez, asking for a healthy, the city of Chicago requiring a reboot under health strategy. Recently, there were $40 million reallocated to HIV from the HIV SD Bureau over agencies serving to, on the inequitable funding decisions that resulted in favoring large organizations over small South and West Side community-based organizations. This month, the CDPH announced the result of a competitive funding cycle that reconfigures the entire HIV portfolio, including prevention and care, with the result of less than 5% that has reached the Latino and African American communities. We are here, I am here advocating on behalf of these small organizations. Due to my advocacy, the health department leadership submitted false claims, and I heard through some sources that they had submitted some false they have submitted some false attacks on me to the Inspector General, and I am here advocating on behalf of the.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, you just made some very serious allegations, and we would like to get your information. I have a lot of confidence in the CDPH leadership. In fact, we meet on a regular basis to talk about these issues. I care very much about getting to zero with HIV transmissions, and we are working with a number of different community organizations to get that, make that happen and become a reality. But those are very serious allegations, sir.
Thank you. Let's have Julna Shelby Brown, who wants to talk about CBOs, Andy Willis about the budget, Yalina Priscalia on waste removal budget, and again, Leslie Willis on the budget. If you will make your way to the microphone, you may go.
Hi, Mayor. My name is Alice Wozniak, and I'm thank you for having us here today. Good morning to everyone. I just wanted to speak about city services and that I hope that they are maintained and improved and not cut. I have an example. An alley light went out in our neighborhood, actually two of them. We called in December. Neighbors called about both lights to 311. One of them has been fixed, and that was in July when it was called in January. And a person got mugged in the area where the light was out. So this is a safety issue. Like, these little things like alley lights are important to people in the neighborhood. So I just hope that people are not taken out of city services. Also, graffiti removal, that all of this stuff is important to people. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Julmar Shelby Brown. I represent Chicago-based organizations across the city of Chicago. I represent their parents. I'm standing before you, Mayor. One, it is an honor and a pleasure, and I'm happy to see you standing up there. It's beautiful. However, I come to you with great distress. Currently, our community-based organizations are under attack. There's no other way for me to put it. There is no political or PC way for me to say it, but that. And because our community-based organizations, mainly in the Austin area on the west side and on the south side in Inglewood and back of the yards, are being attacked, therefore parents who contribute not only to these agencies' success with their Head Start funding, but they also are being given resources and services and high-quality federal-level child care. They have been defunded or underfunded, and now we stand as far as December 1st with the new fiscal year rolling out, that they will either have to close their doors and parents will have to find childcare in the middle of the year, or they will also, we have parent teachers who will be losing their jobs. Us as parents have asked to speak with the city, and we have been told no. We are stakeholders in these agencies. We are constituents and taxpayers.
Thank you, ma'am.
In this city.
Thank you for your comment.
Ma'am, let me address your point. Recently, we did announce the results of an RFP related to early childhood education. The funding does run through December 1st. the commissioner who is here and her team have been working diligently to reach out to people, both who got awards, but also people who either didn't get an award or who got a reduced funding. So we've been working very, very hard to make sure that there are no gaps, there are no circumstances in which children are not going to be in a good, strong program. That dialogue continues. We can certainly take your information, and the commissioner and somebody from her team will reach out to you. But we've been working very, very diligently to make sure that we reach out to the community, that we talk to the CBOs, because we respect the work that CBOs are doing. That we cannot deliver the kind of high-quality services that we need to throughout Chicago without CBOs. It's impossible. They are a valuable, essential part of the ecosystem. But we'd certainly be willing to talk to you about, in more detail, about what your specific issues and challenges are. And I can tell you that if there's a parent group that wants to sit and talk, I will be there. Well, I'm standing here as the mayor telling you no is not an answer.
Thank you. Let's have Megan Selby, who wants to talk about mental health, Medina, who wants to talk about housing and economic development, Alice Jordan on the budget priorities, and Chloe Avery on the budget priorities. You may go, sir.
Hi, Mayor. My name is Andy Willis, and I'm from Albany Park. And thank you for this opportunity. Mayor, you know and I know that the good book or whatever other book you want to read says you can't serve two masters at once. And I believe it's impossible to serve a market real estate juggernaut that is operating in the city of Chicago and also serve the people of Chicago. We are suffering. We are seeing people freezing to death every winter. We are seeing people getting amputated legs every winter. Doctors I know say that's one of the main things they do in Chicago in the winter. So this is a city that claims to be a world-class city. It's intolerable that we have this kind of housing abundance, and in the middle of this abundance, we have people dying in the street. So that's the first thing. It's intolerable. If you want to find some of that money, HUD has been giving money to the city of Chicago for well over 20 years, and that money has accumulated to the tune of over $450 million the last time I looked. And that money is being hoarded by CHA and is not being used to provide low-income housing or any other kind of housing. I know this because I fought for the...
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. We'll go here. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Megan Selby. I teach comprehensive sexual health education as a third-party educator in about a dozen different Chicago public schools. And I'm here to talk about defunding the police. That's right. I want to see that operating budget of 40% that currently goes to police from our operating budget to decrease significantly. I was at a policy community meeting around a CPS and CPD report on community school resource officers recently. They gave us a multi-page report that talks about what students, families, staff want from school resource officers. Page after page describes students wanting people who listen to them, who can de-escalate conflict, and a bunch of other things that police don't do. They're talking about wanting counselors. They're talking about wanting social workers. And you keep trying to say police are the answer to everything. They're absolutely not. And then after these meetings, you release a report saying you're going to double spending on police and schools to $33 million. You're not listening. And if you did support teachers and schools 100%, you'd have a contract with CTU. Yeah. We give a blank check to police in the form of overtime and millions every year for lawsuits on police violence and murder. Why do we keep investing in them? They're not helping us. They're doing harm. We want wonderful mental health, housing, smaller class sizes. Why isn't CPS in their new five-year plan talking about smaller class sizes? The number one most...
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Yulia, and my question is about the waste removal budget and whether any thought has been given into a citywide compost mandate along the lines of cities like Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland. Not only could that make an obvious environmental impact as the second largest city in America, but could also save all of the residents on their city water bills and possibly generate revenue from the sale of compost as a natural fertilizer.
Thank you. Let's have Denise Robinson, who wants to talk about wasteful spending, Dale Smith, housing, and Linda Young, who wants to talk about transparency, if you'll make your way to the microphone. Right here? Yes, ma'am. You may start.
My name is Alice Jordan. I'm a fifth-generation Chicagoan. Mayor Lightfoot, we're really pleased you're here. Thank you. A lot of what I wanted to cover actually has been covered. I definitely want to, hopefully you will hold off on any zoning changes until your team has a full understanding. I think small businesses are extremely important. We want to keep them going, as you have said. Investing in social services, investing in our teachers, investing in our schools, investing in our students. Yes, investing in our police department, our fire department. The park district, all that stuff is important. But what is also interesting is that we want to do it, as you said, equally. Rent control, for example, was mentioned. I would caution us to be careful. We want to make sure it's affordable. Sometimes rent control is not always the right solution. There's other opportunities. Another thing, we want to live in these homes in Chicago. Let's look at the way lead pipes, for example. It's very expensive to change your lead pipes. These are just a couple of things that I think we should look at as a whole and find better ways to make everything affordable for ourselves. And if there is an opportunity for a smaller committee for us to help you, I would be volunteering for that because I've lived in the city and I love it and I'd like to continue to do so. But I want to make sure I can afford it as well as my neighbors and that we are safe and we are educated.
Thank
can you,
you
please give your name and contact information to Nubia, who's right there. Right there. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mayor, and welcome to this beautiful community called Humboldt Park and this beautiful high school that is community-owned. My name is Eliud Medina, and I'm representing the Puerto Rican Agenda here today. And obviously addressing the issue that's been mentioned here today many, many a times, which is housing. One of the biggest displacers of the poor and communities of color from the city of Chicago is housing, the lack of affordable housing. We need to begin to really take this issue very seriously. Obviously, previous administrations have not. Hopefully, we can see the leadership in you and make sure that this issue is worthily addressed. It's very important in order for working people and the working poor to be able to afford to stay in this city. So if we are looking to keep this city a mixed city of all races and religions and creeds, then we need to assure that we pay attention to that. We need to make sure that instead of paying bribes to developers, we demand from developers a 30% set aside of housing affordability in all new projects being developed in the city of Chicago's communities.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yes.
Good morning, Madam Mayor. My name is Dale Smith. I'm here to speak directly to issues of crime and violence on the south side of Chicago, primarily in the Woodlawn area. And my idea is to create a proposal and submit this to whoever I can in the city. Those schools, there's a school that's closed down, and we're interested in working, creating a public and private partnership with the city and to create a new workforce with black youth in that community and being able to have them not just standing around doing nothing, but give them a trade of some sort. I've got retired tradesmen that would also come in to teach and train. And we noticed that the school is, I don't know if it's available or not, but we'd like to have an opportunity to speak to someone and create that partnership.
Thank you.
If you can give your information to Nubia, it's right there.
Let's have Miriam Bimani, who wants to talk about accountability, Andy Willis, the budget, Eileen Kelleher, who wants to talk about mental health, Nick Caputo with the public internet, and Reverend Marika Kimbrough on PMD, if you'll make your way to the microphone. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Linda Young, and I am a second-generation Chicagoan, so my family is very deeply rooted in Chicago. I currently live on the south side, but I formerly lived on the west side before Garfield Park was called East Garfield Park and West Garfield Park, but we ain't gonna get into that. What I think I want to ask of the mayor and all of my neighbors here, let's talk about equity in this city. There are areas still in Chicago where people don't have a damn grocery store. How can we call ourselves world class when, yes, if I come north, there's 50 grocery stores in a 5-mile radius, but on the south side, I can't get one. Come on, neighbors. We have to think about equity, because if we want to grow, when those developers want to put another grocery store in the area that has 50, tell them no. Put the grocery store in my area that doesn't have one. And if you want to give somebody incentives, give it to them in those areas only, because we have to be that change that changes the city. How many grocery stores does the North Side need? I just need one in my South Shore community. Can I ask my neighbor?
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Yes.
Ma'am, I want to thank you for your very great, passionate comments. I think they've resonated with everybody in the room. I'm looking at Samir Mayakar, who's the deputy mayor for economic development, and giving him the look. We hear you. We hear you. Thank you.
Okay. You may start.
So let me guess what school you support.
Game today.
Go Blue.
Saturday is always Michigan gear. A portion of our city's budget consists of revenue generated from property tax, income tax, and user taxes. It follows that the strength of our budget relies upon sheer numbers of people living in the city. I love Chicago, but have lived elsewhere, and wherever I go, I've fended off two major characterizations of our city: that the Cubs are cursed and our city is corrupt. The Cubs have banished the curse. It's time to deal with the corruption. It costs us money. Our city's system of patronage and culture of acceptability is so entrenched that it filters into every agency. Teachers deserve all of our respect. I am a public school parent. I was a public school teacher in Chicago. 52% of our tax bill you put up earlier goes to CPS. But CPS spends millions on middle management and many millions more on outside legal costs. It's top heavy, and it also relies on patronage that goes all the way to the top. Cut the corruption. The recent announcement of federal oversight is the third oversight mechanism involving Chicago public schools. The state is correcting for special ed. The feds are correcting for police involvement in schools, and now the Department of Ed for Title IX. CPS clearly has an internal problem with setting policies and procedures. It costs us money and stability. It affects all of our communities. Please reorganize the agency so general counsel is not above our CEO. It is not a law firm, but a school.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you. You may go, sir.
Hello, Mayor Lightfoot, and thank you for having this forum today. My name is Maurice Kimbrough. I live in the 27th Ward, and we want our West Side community to meet with the new planning commissioner before they approve the Kinsey PMD plan for over 800 acres. Chicago needs businesses, jobs, and tax revenues. Look at the Lake Street from Ashland to California. Some good, many vacant lots and empty buildings. Today, we can put a medical office there, a hair salon. Tomorrow, from Ashland to California, city planners say we can't open any medical office or hair salon. They didn't tell us why or give us any evidence, but they prevented people from speaking at public meetings. Please address automatic control over zoning. We waited 21 years for the PMD, and one person shouldn't be able to decide the future of 800 acres. There was a meeting in August, and the alderman didn't even show up and hear people's concerns. Then the plan was rammed through the zoning committee. Let us meet with your new planning commissioner, present the facts that were denied by the planning department, and gain the PMD plan that brings businesses and jobs, tax revenues to Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's have Eladio Irizarry, who wants to talk about police, and Michael O'Connor, who will talk about affordable housing. And the two of you will be our last two speakers for the morning. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Eileen Kelleher. I'm a licensed clinical social worker in Chicago. And I wanted to ask about mental health because I know that you ran on the spirit of doing things differently in Chicago and being a light, and you also committed to reopening the public mental health clinics. And I think that one of the biggest things that I see in the city of Chicago is that people who have mental health issues are treated horribly. They have no place to live. They have no place to get medication. They have no place to get therapy. There are people suffering with PTSD all over the city who have absolutely no resources. And I don't know if you know or if other people know, but post-traumatic stress disorder is one of the most painful experiences that you can be in. And I think that this false narrative that somehow we have to cut city services or nickel and dime the people of Chicago in order to afford to do things that help working class people is completely false. There's billions of dollars in this city. It's one of the richest cities. Stop giving handouts to corporations and to the 1% and start funding mental health, schools, all the social services that we need. It's absolutely false that we cannot afford this, and I'm sick of hearing about it.
Thank you. Just a moment. JD, our speaker's over here. It's right here. Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, sir.
Hi, good morning.
Here we are.
Hi. The property owners are the largest, as far as SRO, in the country. As in the state of Illinois, proposed to displace 323 low-income residents within the second ward. The second ward is run by Satan reincarnated Brian Hopkins. We need to do better. And the only way that we can do better is if we support a progressive agenda, a progressive budget, and go to the meetings that we purport to be representing. We got a lot of CBOs here who don't allow their people to go to these meetings that would make a difference to show our new mayor. Now, I'm a supporter of Madam Mayor. I supported her when she ran, and I thank you, and I'm so glad that 50 wards, all of us, got a chance to vote for you. We need a change, and we need to be that change. The only way that we can be that change, and I'm not preaching, but I am, is if we go to the meetings. City Hall does what they want to do. There are three parts of government, and we need to make sure with 9 seconds to 8 seconds going that the Holsteins, who are the nonprofit people, don't shut us down at the Lawson House when they're getting ready to
put. Thank you. Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hi, Ms. Mayor. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much. I've been a resident of the city of Chicago for since January 1st, 2017, so I guess kind of relatively new arrival. In that time, I've opened up a business or started a...
A little closer.
Sure. I guess, a relatively new arrival. In that time, I've started a business. I've been keeping it going as much as I can, and I used what I could to purchase a condo when I was there a year ago, too. In that time, I've seen that property tax bill jump 26% in that 1 year. But besides that, I want to just come up with an idea. There are people that I've met that have trouble accessing internet where they live, too. It's not just, we think of it as blanketed all over, but it's not. It's only in a few separate pockets, north side, parts of south, parts of west. But there are areas where you can't easily get access to that. Or when you do, you have to pay like 90 grand to get a wire wired over to your house, and so you could pay Comcast for it. Where in which it's not actually unreasonable or not actually out of the realm of possibility to set up a city-owned ISP, one which you can actually have people pay monthly to actually access internet from the city. You've done it even in smaller places in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It has a gigabit internet for about $70 a month. You can do it for even less here. But that might be one way in which you can actually access additional revenue and also serve communities that also aren't able to actually access this resource that we think is available.
Thank you.
Let me just address your point. Your point is well taken. There are places in the city where literally it's like you're in a bunker and you have no connectivity. We've been pushing the service providers to expand their reach, and particularly when service providers are talking about 5G and so forth. We want just the basics so that everybody in the city has connectivity. In the interim, the thing that I always encourage people to do is our libraries are in every neighborhood across the city. They have full accessibility. There are lots of people that use them as almost like a WeWork space. So that's not a permanent solution, but that is a resource that's available. But meanwhile, we will continue to push and solve this problem. But I like your idea, and we'll definitely explore it. So thank you.
Thank you. Sir, you are our last speaker for the morning.
Yes. Good morning, Mayor. I am Fernando Grillo. I am a proud son of Division Street and Humble Park. As a municipal finance professional, I get a front row seat at looking at those credit reports and know the challenges that you have, Madam Mayor, and your fine first-rate financial team. There's no doubt it's an extremely challenging time for the city, for the administration, for the community at large. With that said, there's never a convenient time to do what is right and what is good for local communities. This morning, I present as co-chair of the Puerto Rican Agenda's Education Committee. And I chair the board of Aspira, a community organization that for 50 years has served and operates four community schools along with some of our partners, including Clemente, Campos, and some of the other local schools. Before the major shutdown in 2013 of community schools, through our Community as a Campus initiative, we embarked on a very ambitious plan to strengthen all of our community feeder schools into Roberto Clemente Academy. We created a plan from cradle to college and beyond. We opened Parent University. We supported the creation of elementary school options. We worked with local schools and two police districts to create a safety zone. You know, we did that as a community. It was our initiative. All of these programs have been implemented with the support of school principals like Principal Mojica and others, local elected officials and community members at large, all under the Puerto Rican Agenda umbrella. And Madam Mayor, we
Thank
seek
you.
Your support for continuation
Thank
of our...
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. You'll turn his mic back on. Sir, you can finish your comment.
All right. We are a CPS Community Action Council with an MOU with CPS, and this morning we seek your support for continuation of our local programs. We invite you back for a dialogue of our vision of education and pedagogy, and we thank you. Gracias.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation today. And this concludes the second of five town hall meetings. The next steps will be that we're compiling the feedback from this testimony and the public comment cards, and we'll be sharing the themes and responses on the city's budget website. The next town hall will take place on September 19th. From 6 to 8 p.m. at George Washington High School. And finally, we want you to know that the Youth Budget Town Hall meeting is going to be September 25th from 6 to 8 o'clock at Lindblom Math and Science Academy. Keep in mind that representatives from the city departments will be here until 11:30, so if you have any other questions outside the auditorium. And on your way out, please consider sending your feedback about the format of today's town hall by visiting this link that's on the screen, which will take you to a quick survey. So again, thank you for coming. Give yourselves a hand. Also, let us, before you depart, let us have the mayor's closing comments. Thank you.
So I want to thank you again, everyone, for being here. I thought we had a very interesting and robust discussion, and I appreciate the sincerity with which a lot of good ideas and proposals were shared, and also the passion that people feel about issues that are affecting your life. That's what we need. That's the kind of dialogue that we're excited about. So thank you very much for that. I want to acknowledge the elected officials who are here. It's important that they come and that they hear from their constituents, and we appreciate the opportunity to provide that kind of dialogue. In particular, I want to note Chairman Dow, who's chairman of the Budget Committee. She is here and working hard, and I appreciate all the hard work that she's doing. Alderman Espada, Alderman Felix Cardona, and I also want to thank the people who brought their children. It's important that we create a environment in which our young people understand that civic engagement is the heart of being an American. It's what sets us apart from other countries across the globe. And no better place to start than with educating your children. So thank you very much, everyone. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you at the next three town halls.